Hello, this is Down the Back of the Seats. I'm Ellen, cinema manager at Campbelltown Picture House.
I'm Alistair, film and theatre maker based on the Isle of Mull.
And Alistair, what is this podcast about?
This podcast explores what happens when public spaces and the public meet. What's left behind? What's been found that's unexpected? What stories are there to tell? It's tales from behind the scenes at the cinema, theatre, concert hall, wherever people meet, linger, and leave things or bits.
It's the school holidays, so the bit levels are fairly high at the moment. They're on a sort of eight out of ten bit level.
Yeah, yeah. That's red bits then.
Yeah. Yeah.
God.
Ian and I have watched Kung Fu Panda several times each, sitting in, glaring at errant children. It's all right. Well, unfortunately, I've watched the second half of Kung Fu Panda several times, and Ian's watched the first half of Kung Fu Panda several times, and we need to swap over. We just had quite a lot of unaccompanied, irritating children, which has been irksome. Although the ones that I was sitting in to keep an eye on, they were really funny. So I was, which made it quite difficult. I was trying to be very stern. I know them of, you know, reputationally, and because they come to the cinema a lot. And there's one of them, he's just really witty. So you're trying to stay stern as the kids. And they're going to be great. I mean, they're going to be smashing. They are smashing children. They just need a bit of an outlet for their creativity and silliness. And it happens at the cinema sometimes.
It's kind of nice, but it's frustrating at the same time.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is nice. I like that they feel that they can express themselves here. I just wish they'd do it outside of watching the films rather than during the films.
Do they come and see the films a couple of times, or do they just come once, do their witty repartee, and then leave?
It depends on the film. So they're not going to come and see Kung Fu Panda again because they didn't like it.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, they thought it was boring. But they, yeah, if they like it, they'll come a couple of times and
cool.
Talk through it.
That's
chat. Yeah. Be difficult through it. But they mainly come to eat snacks and lark about.
That's what cinema's for.
What have you been up to?
I have been, I tried to have the weekend off, which was nice because it was the chocolate egg weekend, and that was lovely. We just made mince and tatties for Easter Sunday, and that was really, really lovely. There's nothing like mince and tatties. And we've been watching quite a lot of films together as a family. We watched one which is a lesser film, but I really love it, called Without a Clue. It's Michael Caine as Sherlock Holmes and Ben Kingsley as Watson. But the twist is that Sherlock Holmes is Watson's character. He's writing it, and Michael Caine's been hired to play Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
And it's really good fun. I've always enjoyed it. So we watched that, and it was really good. And then we watched a documentary about John le Carré called The Pigeon Tunnel, which, oh, man, I'm really chuffed. My son sat through it because, you know, he's 13, he's not read many John le Carré, he doesn't really have a particular interest in espionage drama of a type, but he sat through it and was very taken with it. It's really well made, and the Philip Glass did the music for it, and it's super. And then last night we watched Steve Martin, the documentary, in two halves, the first half of that, and it was very, very interesting. It's a really, yeah, a really well-made documentary where you don't see anyone talking on camera, it's all voices off, and the archive footage they've got and photos there's so much and so many things to see. It must have taken a real power of editing to bring it together. It's very, very well done, so I'm looking forward to seeing part two in the coming day as well. How about you? Seen anything good?
Well, Kung Fu Panda, the second half of Kung Fu Panda several times. I've just remembered I cut out a bit from our last podcast, but one podcast, where I talked about how excited I was to watch Drive Away Dolls. And I cut...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember we talked about how it looked really good? Well, I cut that bit because between us recording the podcast and putting the podcast out, I watched Drive Away Dolls and I hated it. So much. I thought it was not only stupid, but bad.
no.
And you know how rare it is.
It's a half Coen movie.
It's a half Coen, yeah. You know how rare it is for me to think that a film is either brilliant or bad. Normally, I think they're just fine.
It's fine.
And yeah. I was really looking forward to it as well because it looked like sort of B movie, kind of trashy, but quality silliness.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of that sort of thing. And it's only 87 minutes long, which is
That's absolutely ideal.
Delicious. But yeah, I was bored. I didn't laugh. The dialogue was just not good at all, and not trashy, not sophisticated, not anything. It was just bad. And
I'm sorry to hear that.
Was extremely disappointed by it. I managed to get through the whole thing, but only because I had popcorn.
I saw it.
Did you?
I'm probably not going to see it. Thank you for the heads up. On Sunday, you had a community screening of It'll Never Work as well, Joe Osborne's film about Hans Uncle's solar-powered fishing boat. How did that work for the second time round?
Yes. Now, this is a film set in a documentary recorded in Te Valach, which is just across the water from us. It's sort of the next peninsula over, I guess. And it is a guy who builds a solar-powered fishing boat. And we've played it before. We had a sort of full house. And so we played it again this weekend. And it's such... You've not seen it yet, have you?
I saw it. Was at the premiere, yeah.
Oh, of course you were. It. Yeah.
Yeah. Col came with me as well. It's Joe's a young filmmaker. I think he's just in his very early 20s. And he's fantastic. He's also a full-time fisherman as well. So he's a properly interesting artist. And he has... One of the greatest things about his work is that he has a really fantastic sense of play in a lot of his short films. So to see him experimenting with that playfulness in this film is fantastic. And Hans is such a witty and he's really great company, Hans. So it's to see him chatting about it as well as, you know, about his work is really good fun. And when I went to the premiere, I might have said this before, I don't know, but Hans got given the microphone at the start of the movie. He said, "You never give me a microphone." It was Hans in his kind of late 50s, maybe even early 60s. And he's the first thing he says after he said that is, "Willies, bums, willies." It's like, oh, Hans. So that gives you the flavour of the film. There's a TV version of it coming at some point, and it's excellent. It's a bit of hope, a bit of aspiration, about kindness, about a difficult task. It's lovely.
It really is. Yeah, I was so taken with it. I watched it all the way through because we'd had a bit of trouble with the DCP file. So I watched it all. It's a delight. Anyway, yeah, so it was a smaller, we played it Saturday, Sunday, smaller audiences than last time, but just people were delighted by it. Actually, every person that came out said, "What a lovely film. That's wonderful." So really happy to do it.
We really, really need this in Scottish cinema. We need films that are made by Scots filmmakers. No, I don't mean ethnically Scots. I mean people who live in Scotland that are committed to making their life here and understand the nature of life in communities. And I'm really drawn to Scandinavian cinema. There's Aki Kaurismäki's brother makes some really nice movies. There's a lovely one called Master Chen, which is still an iPlayer, if anyone gets a chance to see it. Master Chen is a beautiful film about community and people coming into a community from into the north of Sweden, or kind of in a remote part of Sweden, certainly. And I just love the way that Scandinavian cinema so often looks at community and notions of belonging and fitting in and not fitting in, and also the difficulties of community. And it ties back into the work of Ian Banks for me, the novelist. Have you ever read any Ian Banks at all, Ellen?
No, I haven't, I'm afraid.
I think there's a lot in there that you'd really enjoy. He's one of my favourite novelists, and he has novels which are either seem to fit into the pattern of an individual against a community, or a community seeing an individual. So it's either one side of the coin or the other side of the coin, and I love these things. And I think there's something really, there's an authentic voice of Scottish cinema to be found. That's, you know, kind of, there's lots of films made in Scotland but don't get seen, so we need to get them out there. And then there's some films that get made that are seen about Scots that are just, oh Jesus Christ. I'm thinking of one film, actually two films by one filmmaker in particular that I won't mention. Oh, never, never. Anyway, yes. So yeah, no, we need more Scots movies made in, you know, authentic voices of communities, and Joe's work is very much part of that, and I can't wait to see where his work continues to grow as a young filmmaker. I think he's a really solid bet for the future.
I would agree with that. It's an extremely accomplished work, considering he is so young and it is so early in his career. Alistair, you know how much I love The Holdovers.
I can't wait to see it. Yes, thank you.
Yes. Have you heard anything? Have you heard anything about it in the trade presses? Have you seen the slight controversy?
Oh no! Please don't tell me. Okay, tell me. What
no,
happened.
No, it's okay. You don't have to hate The Holdovers now. So it has been accused. The writer of The Holdovers has been accused of plagiarism.
Oh, God.
By a Scottish writer called Simon Stevenson, who I'm actually a big fan of. He's written three books, two novels and a sort of memoir. His two novels are Set My Heart to Five, which I think I've recommended or mentioned to you in the past. It's been picked up and is being made into a film by Edgar Wright. He's on board to direct it. It's a great book. And another one called Sometimes People Die, which is a hospital drama. And then he's got a memoir about his brother. And he has written on films like Luca and Paddington 2. He did writing on Paddington 2. The Louis Wayne, do you remember what's it called? The Something Something Life?
Yeah,
of,
the, you know, the Remarkable World of Louis Wayne.
Yeah, he wrote that. And he has said that The Holdovers script is identical in form, and all the beats are the same, and the story's the same to his script Frisco, which was 2012, I think he wrote it, and it has been on the blacklist, the Hollywood blacklist. Could you explain what the Hollywood blacklist is briefly?
So the Hollywood blacklist is a list of screenplays that are people have a lot of tension about and really want to kind of want to work on, and they're just not quite there yet, or, you know, there's not something they can't quite get to around to be being made. They're films that filmmakers really want to make but just haven't quite got there yet with.
Yes. And he, Simon Stevenson, knows that Alexander Payne, who's the director of The Holdovers, has read his script, had read his script at least on two occasions before The Holdovers was made. And he's written this big sort of paper about how The Holdovers is a direct copy of Frisco.
God.
But it's not that it isn't, because Simon Stevenson would know. So if anyone's going to know, he would know. The stories are sort of broadly parallel. So in Frisco, there's a doctor who has to look after a 15-year-old girl. Yeah. And doesn't really want to. A curmudgeonly doctor has to look after a teenager and learns the true meaning of whatever. That's the sort of, but, you know, that's Hunt for the Wilder People, and that's Up, and that's, you know, that's not a new story. What Stevenson is saying is that the beats are so exactly the same that it's as if his script Frisco has been put into a script writing software, and The Holdovers has been written directly over the top. So there's lots of change. There are lots of changes, and they are ostensibly completely different scripts. But his accusation is that the one came out of the other. So I guess my thought experiment to you is, where is plagiarism? Where does it start and where does it end? Because these are two scripts that are not the same. But if they've been overwritten, is that still plagiarism? And I was thinking about my beloved Christmas films, which are exactly the same film, exactly the same beats, almost exactly the same script with minor changes. And where does copying start and finish?
This takes us back to kind of academic theory and Theodore Adorno and Tin Pan Alley and the nature of music being the 1950s records being repeated and repeated and got churned out and churned out. So it's form, it's content, and you know there's only certain types of, there's only so many types of model of form that you can follow and things like that is what part of the argument that, that someone would use against this. I think personally that's pretty grim. That's really, really upsetting.
If it's the case, we should say if it is the case, it's sort of on the internet, jury of the internet, the tide seems to be sort of away from Simon Stevenson saying, "Nah, you've been ridiculous. This is just another script about a curmudgeonly person who has to look after a youth and learns the meaning of blah blah blah."
Well, there's a thing, theory of intent. What was the filmmaker's intent? Is and that kind of nourishes everything with a project. Is how you what you intend for it, and if it was, well, that's a good idea. I think I'll steal that and make it my own. That makes it really, really unpleasant. The practically 10% difference if you're building houses. If a house is 10% different from another design, it's a different house.
Is it?
You can't be. Yep.
How do you quantify that 10%? That's extraordinary.
In our case. There has to be a degree of difference. Yeah. So you go back to copyright, My Sweet Lord, the song by George Harrison, which was very similar to another song. Very, very similar to another song. You've also got is it Do You Realize by the Flaming Lips as well, which is very similar to a Cat Stevens song, I think is that one. And so there's only a finite number of chords you can have in a song, so there's always that. Again, the story thing is like so much story theory is based around the hero with a thousand faces, which gave us. If you look at Dune, it's actually a very similar story structure to Star Wars overall. They're kind of, they're just patterns. Not to be an academic arsehole, but if you go back to the work of the Russian kind of structuralist, you get Vladimir Propp's Morphology of the Folktale, where he identifies that there are only a certain number of variations within Russian folktale and storytelling, and that was then able to be modelled onto other kind of modern writing for films, and you can see that again there's patterns that repeat and repeat. It's a really difficult one to quantify, but yeah, if Simon knows that story and it's the beats are the thing, understanding the rhythm of how something works and how it turns and how it lives, the kind of organic nature of writing, that's very upsetting. Because that's and that's one of the reasons why unsolicited scripts are not touched in filmmaking, because you could say that anything's been influenced by something, and if you happen to open a script and read it and go, oh, that's great, and then some years later on you accidentally incorporate part of an idea from that, a chap who is 90% spoon or whatever, I don't know, can reflect the light of the moon, you think, oh, that's really nice, I like that, and just keep it away in the back of your mind and think, oh, that's someone else's work, but then suddenly you think, oh, that's a chap who's 90% fork who reflects the light of the sun or whatever, it's like, oh no. It's really difficult. It's really, really difficult, and that's intellectual property lawyers are a complex bunch as well. We certainly had a case here on Mull where there was an intellectual property case about a character that was created to market at a location, and the person that created it was then told by other people, oh no, you didn't create that, when in fact they really did, and it was very upsetting.
Mm. Yeah, I haven't read Frisco. I think it's available now, so I'm going to probably have a read of it just because I'm interested. And I like Simon Stevenson's work, his previous work as well. But I don't actually have an opinion on whether it was plagiarism, because I don't know. I don't know what happened. And I hope that he gets it sorted one way or another. It sounds
hope there's a resolution in that, yeah.
I was listening to another podcast that had an intellectual property lawyer on, and they were talking about it, and he was saying, whatever the truth is, it's extremely difficult to prove anything, and particularly in this case where the scripts are different and you're talking about the arcs and the beats and the characters' traits rather than actual pointing to lines and going, right, that's exactly the same line, because they haven't done that. Yeah, interesting.
If you look at Elf and you look at Eurovision, they are essentially the same movie. My wife spotted this, and they follow the same story beats as well, and the same kind of patterns, and it's for the same redemption at the end. It's like, it's quite...
Well, this is, yeah,
Wolf Herald maybe only has one trick, but I don't know.
Well, this is what I mean. Like, all romantic comedies are the same.
Yes.
All horror films are basically the same. All action films are basically the same. All Westerns... Definitely, all the genres, basically, they're all...
Racist.
Stop it. But do you know what I mean? Any genre piece that you're doing is going to have... Yeah, it's going to be the same film.
Form and content. Yeah. It's the maquettes into which things are grown out of or poured into.
Yeah.
It's organic storytelling is the dream. But the nature of things is, well, you know, you're working on something, you've got a great idea, you take it out, and I know this from theatre particularly, is that you try something out and it's like, yeah, well, that's going to work so well. You get there and you're like, oh, no. And you have to change and grow it in the making of it. And that's filmmaking as well. There's very few films that are made that are entirely storyboarded, and it's exactly that you see. In fact, I'm sure I've said this before, but John McTiernan, one of my favourite directors of kind of action movies like Predator and things like that, and Die Hard, said that storyboarding is only a tool to help budget something. If you stick to storyboarding entirely, you're going to take the life out of the film.
Shall we return to Double Bills?
Let us do.
So if you recall, the question of Double Bills came from Dave Allen, not that one.
Hmm.
And he has given us Jaws and Digby, the Biggest Dog in the World.
Oh, interesting.
Which is a good one. And A Clockwork Orange and Meatballs.
No, oh God, Clockwork Orange I find so hard to watch.
That's because it's got Stephen Berkoff in it.
No, leave his Rice Krispie alone.
I don't like
love Stephen Berkoff.
I don't like Stephen Berkoff.
He's my favourite. I love him.
No, he's not.
He's so...
Ugh.
He's great.
Sorry, I don't know. I don't hate him as a person. I just don't like Stephen Berkoff.
It's so upsetting that the... It's just the rape in it, you know, there's so much rape in it. It's just really, and it's done with such, la-da, it's like, oh, it's really hard to watch. And there's a really load of good stuff in there that's great, but yeah, like really, really well-made film. But I find it's the only Kubrick movie I can't really get on with. And Meatballs, that's a very interesting.
You'd have to have Meatballs after, you'd have to watch Meatballs after Clockwork Orange, I think.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, just clear your palate.
Yeah, exactly.
And serve it with meatballs.
With meatballs. And back to Cliff.
Yes, the master.
The master. So Cliff says, hello, Ellen and Alistair. As if I haven't rambled enough about Double Bills, I thought you might be interested in The Attached. Recently, I visited Australia for the first time and went via Los Angeles so I could, among other things, tick a couple of things off the bucket list. One of these was a visit to the New Beverly Cinema, which Quentin Tarantino owns. It runs...
Oh, wow!
It runs film only, no digital, and often shows Double Bills. I went to see Children of Men and Snowpiercer. Oh, oh.
That's a heady combination, by God.
That is a heady and heavy combination.
That's Apocalypse Now, that's what that is. Oh, sorry.
Children of Men is one of the films that I thought was a masterpiece, but I shall never watch it again. That's always the one I think of. Yeah, but it's brilliant.
It's the sequence where they're running along in the kind of the siege bit of the city, where they're running along as a long take, is absolutely incredible. There's an amazing YouTube video of how they were doing that, following a focus puller as he's working remotely, pulling the focus and the camera. It's absolutely amazing.
He says, wonderful seeing both with a vibrant audience, but I nearly went the night before for what seems on the surface as an unusual double bill, but is inspired. Now, I'm going to give you the first film in the double bill and let you see if you
The Princess Diaries.
It's not.
And Predator.
And Predator. It is It's a Wonderful Life plus, what would you put with It's a Wonderful Life? It's not an immediate, I'll give you a clue. It is a Christmas. It's another Christmas.
The Bishop's Wife.
No, that would make sense. This makes sense in an incredible way.
It's Another Life and White Christmas?
No, you're thinking too nice. So think Christmas films.
Oh, and Bad Santa?
Not a million miles away. That's the sort of area that we're in.
Which I left the cinema from. I didn't enjoy seeing Bad Santa. I did not like it. I'm not sure. Tell me, do.
It's a Wonderful Life and Gremlins.
That's absolutely perfect.
Yeah, isn't it?
That really is. That is what a, that's this year's festive double bill.
yeah, on film as well, yeah, rather than digital.
Well. Oh, I love Gremlins. It's really a brilliant film.
Cliff goes on. I also discovered in Melbourne at the Nova Cinema that they do monthly double bills, and I picked up their 2024 program for you, which you might be of interest. Right, so there's loads of them. This cinema looks amazing, so I've picked out a few. We've got the double suspense from Alfred Hitchcock. We've got North by Northwest and Strangers on a Train.
Oh my God, I was going to say the two of those together. Oh my God, that would be amazing.
That'd be good. Rock and roll cult musical masterpieces, The Rocky Horror Picture Show, of course, and Phantom of the Paradise.
Phantom of Paradise, yeah. Brian De Palma, one of his early movies.
Ah,
he's got,
right.
It's a sort of, yeah, disco kind of, well, it's an extraordinary thing. Yeah, I've still never seen it. I'm desperate to see it, but what I've seen of it looks amazing.
A quick one that I would really like to watch, and I think I might have watched this as a double bill in my own home, What We Do in the Shadows and Hunt for the Wilder People.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. And then I love this one. This is, it's called Interspecies Romance Never Felt So Sexy. And the films are The Shape of Water and The Fly.
That's an absolute masterpiece.
Good double bill, eh? And then finally, I've picked out, It's called Carpenter and Cronenberg Providing Twice the Thrills. Twice the Chills. What would you put as a Carpenter and Cronenberg double?
They Live Followed by Existence.
Oh, Existence. That's a good film. It's not, but you could pick out any Carpenter and any Cronenberg, really. It's The Thing followed by Videodrome.
Oh, my God. I want to go to there, to quote Tina Fey. The Thing is the most perfect movie that has ever been made. It's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, there's some such... Okay, I'm going to stop reading those because there's some such good double bills. I think I might just steal.
Why don't you do a double bill of The Thing and Videodrome? Would people come in Campbellton, do you think?
No, I don't think so, and then I'd be sad.
Oh.
But I think there's something...
Even Studio 2?
Yeah, I could. I mean, double bills... Yeah, double bills. I need to get on to some double bills. And Cliff finishes with, before I go, a question for you both. Not taking anything away from your excellent efforts, thank you very much, but what other podcasts about film and cinema do you listen to and recommend?
That's a really good...
I'm going to let you go second because you've got some better... You've got more, and I see you're looking through your phone now. I just do the big ones, I'm afraid. So I've got Kermit and Mayo's Take, as it now is, and the Empire podcast. Those are my main two. Three Bean Salad Film Club is
Oh, you subscribed to that?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Is it nice?
It's a delight.
Good.
It's not really about film. But I can recommend a book, especially the audiobook version, because Cliff said he's always looking for a great accompaniment to a good walk. Helen O'Hara's book, who is actually from the Empire Film Podcast. Helen O'Hara has written a book called Women versus Hollywood, and it is wonderful. You read it as well, didn't you? Did you read it with your eyes or with your ears?
I listened with my ears, and then I bought it so I could read it with my eyes as well, because there's so many facts and things in there. It's an extraordinary piece of work. Really, really worth it.
Yeah. So not really an answer to your question, but that would be my recommendation for something to put into your ears while walking. Helen O'Hara, Women versus Hollywood. Alistair, what have you got?
So there's absolutely loads. I tend to, when I'm listening to podcasts, just go for kind of more fun and relaxing things, just because, life's in that way that it's nice to have fun things. So I listen to a podcast called Smersh Pod very often, which is by a chap called John Rain, who is he's a very interesting podcaster, really just daft and silly, small boy humour. But Smersh Pod originally was going through all the Bond movies and Bond adjacent movies and talking through them and just talking silliness about them. So that was really good. But then for more serious things, I do listen to on occasion a really good one called The Cinematologists, which are two academic guys talking about cinema and the nature of cinema. There is Roger Deakins, the cinematologist, the cinematographer, has a fantastic podcast called Team Deakins, which is kind of the sort of dream where he talks with other professionals about the nature of their work in film. There's 83 episodes of it here, looking at the most recent one, Paul Schneider, actor, and then the one before that is Garrett Brown, the inventor of the Steadicam, which, if you're a fan of Kubrick's work and The Shining, that is a total one to hear. Our friends at the Hippodrome and Bowness have a podcast for the HipFest Silent Film Festival as well, which is really interesting to see, to have a look at. A friend, John Bleasdale, who's a really lovely, really great company film journalist, he has a series of different film podcasts called Cinema Italia, and there's other ones he's done as well, taking writers on film, talking about film books, interviews with people that write books about film. So, for instance, he's got John Higgs, who wrote one of my favourite books on film, about, which his name has now gone from my head, damn it, who's written about Bond and the Beatles together. He's got them talking there. It's brilliant. There's also Nitrate Hour, I think it's called, which is about silent cinema and restoring and finding films. And there's a really, really lovely one. I don't know if you know it at all, Ellen, called The Cinemile. Have you come across The Cinemile?
No, I haven't. No.
Oh, it's really good. I don't listen to it very often, but it's a husband and wife that go to walk to the cinema, talk about what they're going to see, watch the film, and then walk back from the cinema.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's really, really nice. It's just them walking and going, that was great. That was shite. So I recommend, those are all ones I recommend. And I'm sure there's loads more that I've forgotten about.
That's plenty.
Yeah.
You're getting along with.
Oh, no, actually, sorry, of course.
No, Alistair hasn't finished.
Sorry, I do apologise. Most importantly of all, one that's very dear to my heart and it's very silly. It's although there's a lot of good stuff in there that kind of actually is quite intelligent, is Random Movie Generator by David Earle and David Edwards.
Yes.
Very, very enjoyable thing. So there, that was a list of podcasts, an exhaustive list of film podcasts. I'm hoping to do one myself as well at some point. It's going to be called Pool Focus, but... yeah, I can't get the name right for it, so it's taken me ages to get around to it. But I hope that Ellen Mainwood will feature in that as well as a guest from time to time.
Well, just come along and say, yeah, it was fine. Yeah, I liked it. Yeah. Cool. It's good, yeah.
It's called It's Just Fine.
I should do a movie review podcast. Yeah, it's good.
Fine.
Yeah. Right, shall we wind down?
Thank you, Cliff. Thank you, Dave, for writing in. Very, very much appreciated both of you. It's great. And thank you to all our listeners. It's really lovely to have you listening.
If you would like to send us anything, please do. We're on downthebackoftheseats@gmail.com, or we can be found on Facebook or Instagram, Down the Back of the Seats. Goodbye.